For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The following program was pre-recorded, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Get ready to take notes, because school is now in session. Tackling the biggest issues in education, this is Education America. Save the classroom, save the country. Here are your hosts, Headmaster Rebecca Hagstrom and co-host Abigail Johnson.
Hey, teacher, leave them kids alone.
Welcome to Education America, where we are working to save the classroom so that we can save the country. K-12 education is the playing field where the battle is on for the future of our country. And as the 16th president, Abraham Lincoln, succinctly stated, the philosophy of the schoolroom in one generation will be the philosophy of government in the next. And how true that is, and what an appropriate statement before we start talking about a different type of classroom education, right?
Yes, absolutely. And we are going to continue our conversation with Mr. Jeremy Tate. Listeners, if you had a chance to check out our previous episode, Mr. Tate was so kind to join us for two. He is the founder and CEO of the Classic Learning Test. He's very involved in the development of classical education across the nation, really. He also is a participant with the Anchored podcast, which is the CLT podcast. I will say I have taken a listen to it and found it very insightful, as well as doing a lot of fun work on Twitter. His handle is at JeremyTate41. And some of the really fun things that he puts on Twitter that I really enjoy, and we'll maybe talk just a little bit about why he does this, is he posts a lot of pictures of things that are beautiful. Beautiful libraries, beautiful cathedrals. And so welcome, Mr. Tate. We're so glad you're here with us. And maybe we can just talk a little bit about why are you such a proponent of truth, beauty, and goodness?
Abigail, Rebecca, great to be back. And by the way, I love, love, love your intro music. Whoever picked that out is a genius.
Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you. It's funny because I don't think Abigail likes it as much as I do.
Oh no.
Fantastic. It's fantastic.
All right. Very good. Thank you for the compliment. We will take that one.
We're going to start fighting about it when we get off the air again. Thanks for picking up that one.
Oh, but the words truth, beauty, and goodness are associated with the words classical education. And you have created this classic learning test. You see the beauty and the importance of a classical education. Why don't you tell us a little bit about why you're so passionate about it and really how you developed a love for classical education?
Sure. Yeah. And I always love hearing everybody's story because it's kind of most people discovered this as an adult or later in life. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a few kind of like second gen now, people like, you know, Josh Gibbs at Veritas who grew up receiving a classical education. I did not. I mean, my mother, a great classroom teacher, French and Spanish. So I grew up, but I was pretty bored, you know, in school. I think as a lot of students are. And I think that's inevitably what happens when you kind of rip the transcendentals out of education. Mm-hmm. Boredom is the inevitable result. Mm-hmm. But for me, what happened was a couple things. One was I was doing youth ministry 2007 to 10 at Annapolis EP Church in Maryland. And there were three or four groups of kids. One group was a public school group. Another was a homeschool group. There was a classical Christian school kind of group. They all went to Rockbridge Academy.
Oh yeah.
And I only knew where they went. I knew nothing about this kind of education, but it was really notable that something was happening there. Just the way the kids spoke, the maturity level, their love, their genuine love for learning. Mm-hmm. It was my kind of first exposure. And then really in seminary and I remember sitting in class, it was never the point of a class, but I left New York City 3 years in the inner city thinking like, what are we doing? Like, what is what is even the point of all of this?
Mm-hmm.
And it struck me in seminary, like, wow, like almost every other generation, they were trying to do something almost entirely different. And their goal, classical people call it a telos, right? Their goal was really human formation. It was a cultivation of virtue. In fact, education was often just called formation for centuries. Like, he's being sent off to formation. She's being sent off to formation. It was so closely tied into the moral formation of young people that it was called that. And, you know, I was looking at what we were doing. It wasn't even closely tied or even touching on character formation. It was just a soulless, sterile kind of credentialing. Get your diploma so you can go get your next one, so you can go get your job. So I started to take a real interest in the way other people were educated. And, you know, even to the point of starting CLT, I actually did not know much at all about this whole movement happening. I have clear memories of tutoring students and running test prep classes and thinking, why do I have to go over for the 15th time this silly passage from, you know, some previous college board SAT test? How cool would it be to be doing Flannery O'Connor or C.S. Lewis or Frederick Douglass or Jane Austen or Shakespeare instead of this nonsense?
Right.
And and then really, you know, once we got going, I think the early enthusiastic adopters were all people in this classical world. And it's been amazing now to be part of this as the classical movement has kind of burst onto the national scene.
It's all coordinated at the very same time. I mean, I feel like you were really poised to take advantage of this growth in classical education that you weren't even aware was happening when you developed the test. That's pretty interesting. So I assumed that you had titled it Classic Learning Test kind of in honor of the classics and classical education, but it sounds like that's not actually the case.
Yeah, you know, early with so many conversations, early days, like, what do we call this thing? And of course, we didn't go with classical because there's no Greek, there's no Latin. A lot of folks think there is. We're talking about kind of what happened with Coca-Cola Classic, right? It's like they had something really good. And then they tried to mix with their recipe, and people were like, stop, what are you doing? And they rebranded, and they're like, nope, we're going back. Coca-Cola Classic, you know? And so that's kind of how we came up with the idea for the name.
Got it. That's really interesting. Do you know that a long time ago, I actually suggested that for a marketing campaign for Liberty to have a postcard with all the classic Coke, classic rock, all the ways we use the word classic, and classic education, going back to the best, the root, the best, right? And that's what it implies. So that's very interesting. I didn't realize that. But so going back to your growing interest in classical education, you know, this is one of the things that I have also noticed is that all of us that I'm aware of in my circle learned about classical education as an adult. And it is really shocking because it's so effective. And, you know, as an educator, my background is different than yours. I was actually a speech pathologist. And so a lot of my training is in child development and cognitive development. And I was just I was completely sold on classical education by learning about the various stages of learning. So the grammar, the logic, and the rhetoric. And for me, they coordinate so perfectly with the way a child was designed to learn that I thought, oh my goodness, why isn't every child educated like this in this country? And of course, you know, there's a whole history as to why that's not the case anymore. But you pair that with the virtue and the idea of truth, beauty, and goodness, and it is beautiful, and it is so effective. And going back to how you first learned of it, you watched high school kids, or maybe they were even middle schoolers, I'm not sure, you were a youth director in a church, and you saw a distinct difference amongst the kids who were attending a classical Christian school. And so, you know, why don't you speak to a little bit you know, why do you think there is such a difference? You know, do you want to help our listeners understand really what is the difference between a classical education? You talk about truth, beauty, and goodness, but how does that play out in the classroom other than you're teaching virtue? Yes, we are teaching virtue, but there's more to it than that that makes these kids more mature, more responsible, more interested in learning. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, totally. And I, you know, I think about being in the last couple of years I was in a public school environment. I would ask the students, and I think they thought I was asking them a trick question, and I was asking them because I didn't know. And I was coming to kind of just the point of just not just disenchantment, but kind of despair about what we were doing in this whole big, massive public school endeavor. And I would ask, why are we here? What's the point of school? And literally almost every kid would say something along the lines of to get a better job. And they would say it like, we know this already, like to get a better job. And I would write up on the board just because I had seen the quote and it really struck me. What I hear is not exactly a Plato quote. It's kind of a synthesis yeah. from part of the Republic, that the object of education is to learn to love what is beautiful. And I write that on the board and they're like, well, what does that even mean? And we'd start to talk about that. Yeah, I mean, the reason classical education is catching absolute fire right now is the same exact reason why, you know, Beauty and the Beast is, it never dies and mm-hmm. is forever popular. Mm-hmm. It's that these kinds of stories, the stories that are classics, are the ones that in any context, any generation, any society, they so profoundly touch on the most universal aspects of what it means to be human that every generation mm-hmm. sees them as worthy of passing down to the next. Mm-hmm. And they're formative on young people in that way. And I think what we're seeing is kind of like my experience. You know, people meet other people's kids who are receiving this kind of education. They're like, what are y'all doing? Your kids are amazing. You know, they're well-spoken, they're respectful, and they seem to really like school. Mm-hmm. Like, what's up with that? You know, yeah. they're not miserable. Like, they seem to... They like it. And that's why it's reached this, you know, kind of the Malcolm Gladwell tipping point. I think it's happening right now. And in a way, I mean, there's whole districts in Florida, whole districts that are rolling out a classical track for every student. And we're talking about public school.
Wow. Yes. I read that Miami-Dade County is thinking about yeah. doing this, which if listeners, if you're not aware, we've mentioned Miami-Dade County before only because it just, for Florida, it is one of the more liberal counties mm-hmm. in Florida. So when I read that article, yeah. my jaw dropped a little bit.
Yeah.
And what is interesting to me that, I mean, obviously it's probably quite new down there, but I'd love to see. Because some of the difference between what we would call a standard education and classical education is in classical education, we're willing to state that it is not value neutral,
mm-hmm.
Which, yeah. I mean, really standard education, what kids are getting in public schools, it's also stating values, but they will say we're not teaching values. But yet you do have to look at their curriculum and see mm-hmm. you really are teaching values of some sort. So I'm very curious to see how that translates
mm-hmm.
when you're teaching it without
sure, yeah.
a religious component.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure they're figuring something out,
mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
that I'm interested in that.
Yeah, yeah. I had no idea that was happening in Florida.
Yeah, and I think the way they're trying to do that is making a distinction between virtues and values.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And the virtues, you know, at least the four cardinal virtues that, you know, the ancient world was able to agree on, that maybe, and it's funny, I was talking to Mother Jones of all people just a week or two ago, and you know, not people you would expect to be friendly towards classical or conservative ideas about education, and they were actually very interested of like, yes, like education should teach students about the concepts of justice. Like, everyone, left, right, center, knows we ought to be teaching our students, you ought to be patient. You're going to be happier if you're patient. We're mm-hmm. teaching them these character virtues that have been totally lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that is actually the way a lot of the classical charter schools have done okay. it. They actually have their list of virtues and then they really incorporate those in. But, you know, obviously coming from a classical Christian school, the ideal is being able to point back to the why, right? Mm-hmm. You know, why are these virtues important? They're good for us as humans, but they're also things that you know, we would take it the step further and say that this is what we're called to be, the fruit of the spirit, the fruit of the spirit. And so that's the benefit of the classical Christian piece, but focusing in on those general human traits and virtues, I think, is also really important. And it's probably more the way education used to be way back prior to, you know, the onset of modern education in the 1920s or so.
Well, and some of the things that... I'm sorry, Jeremy, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think this is where the classical charter movement is going to help Christian schools of, like, be distinct.
Yeah.
And what's really different about you is not just classical anymore, but it's that you're classical Christian.
Yeah.
And so my hope and prayer is that classical Christian schools will double down and embrace feverishly their Christian identity.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I know we do at Liberty. You know, we say that we are unapologetically Christian. And that is a big part of what we are doing. It's integrated into every subject. And yet the academic level is high. You know, it's not just about the Christian values, right? So, and that kind of leads me to, did you want to say something else? Okay. That leads me to the pre-conversation that we had, Jeremy, about, you know, a standard high school today, whether public or private, and even sometimes Christian, the focus often is on AP. And, you know, the idea being, well, I'm going to take advanced placement classes because it's going to give me some college credit. Parents like it because it saves them some money as their kids go off to college. The colleges like it because, you know, their hope is that it's the better students that are taking those classes. And then the students like it because, hey, they can get out of some of their college time. And so it's sort of this, it feeds itself, right? And I think it's one of the reasons why it's still so popular, even though now we know that these kids are not mastering the material. Teachers are being trained through College Board to teach to the test. And they, as I like to say, they tend to be an inch deep and a mile wide. They're not teaching kids how to think. And a classical education teaches kids how to think. And so maybe talk about that differential a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. And I'm happy to talk about AP as well, if that's helpful.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, if you think back to 20 years ago, it's hard to even describe how powerful kind of the AP brand was 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was a huge deal, and not that many kids did it either. And if you did, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
And it's come on a very hard time. So we can definitely talk more about that. Can you kind of restate that question, actually?
Sure. What I was saying is the traditional American high school, whether it be public, private, or even Christian, tends to go towards AP as their go-to rigor. You know, they think, well, this is going to be the rigor that we're going to provide at this school. We're going to really promote AP classes. And what I was saying is it's sort of this kind of circular support, because parents like it because they think it's going to save them money because the kids get college credit. The colleges like it because they think they're going to get smarter students. And then the students like it because they think it's going to release them from having to do four full years of college. So, but academically, just from a pure academic, not even going into the values that are taught in the AP classes, which I would like you to touch on, even just from a pure academic standpoint, it doesn't hold a candle to classical education. And so I would love to have you talk about that.
Yeah, and some of the leading classical schools in the country, you know, place like Veritas in Richmond, I'm almost positive they don't have a single AP class.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, out of the gate, that was a very principled, tough decision for them to make.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's been, that is more and more of a trend right now, that schools that are really focused on academic excellence, they either have none or they have very few. And if they do have some, it tends to be things like AP, BC, Calc, or something like that.
That's us.
That's right.
Go ahead. Keep going.
But yeah, even on the college side, they've really, really, very colleges now are giving, you know, maybe for a four or five, but a lot of colleges have gone away from giving any credit at all now for AP courses.
Yes, yes. And actually, I believe it was back in 2014, I read an article that Dartmouth was going to eliminate all credits for AP starting in 2018. And to your point, I think a lot of schools are following suit. And, you know, maybe you can compare that type of an education. If you're doing all AP, compare that to what you're getting in a classical school.
Yeah, you know, and there's, you know, we believe as classical education lovers, you know, we're all Piper fans, and we believe that leisure is deeply connected to actual learning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the pressure cooker of like, I'm taking 10 APs and I'm going to get fives on all of them. And oh yeah, the kid also hates school and hates his life. I think that is a reality.
Yeah.
Like everybody knows that kid, or we all have known that student. And so at great classical schools, they're cultivating a genuine love for music and for art and for theater and for these things that we consider kind of the useless arts. And a really good classical school is hyper-focused not on what are you going to do for a job, but on what are you going to do in the other, you know, 140 hours a week or whatever it is that you're not working. Mm. What are you going to do then? How are you going to live? What's going to make your life meaningful? And that's, you know, and especially as we're thinking about a world where AI is going to continue to disrupt work mm-hmm. more and more, we need to know what to do with ourselves.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And know that what you do in your high school years and or your college years, I would say the vast majority of adults that I talk to, you know, you ask them, what did you go to college for? What was your major? And are you using it now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, 90% of them are not. Yeah. They are not using it
yeah.
now.
Totally. Yeah.
So, you know, parents, as you're thinking about, you know, what do I want for my child? You know, of course, we want them to be productive. And I would argue that classical actually sets students up for success because exactly what you said, Jeremy, the world is changing. It's very different now than it was 10 years ago. And I am confident that it will be very different in 2033 than it is
yep.
now. And mm-hmm. and classical builds skills that help students become very adaptable.
Mm-hmm. It supersedes an actual particular career. It sets them up for success.
That is one
regardless.
Of the best ways I've heard somebody put it. It makes them super adaptable. And yeah. I think, honestly, that's been part of the secret sauce of why CLT has been so successful. We're mm-hmm. hiring St. John's College. They had no there's no majors there. It's liberal arts. It's a deep dive in books. We're hiring from Hillsdale and Patrick Henry and English majors, and they're incredible, and they've had an immersion into classical education. But what it does is it makes them a certain kind of person, mm-hmm. which I think is what the world in 10 years is going to need more than any particular specialization.
Mm-hmm. Makes them a virtuous person, and a person that's hardworking.
And willing mm-hmm. to question. Mm-hmm. And I think at least in my yeah. role at Liberty yeah. and what just with my legal background, what we saw over the past 3 years with COVID is a stark difference between those who were willing to ask questions. And even if you ask questions, that doesn't mean we were all on the same side or came down on, you know, came to the same yeah. end conclusion. But there was a stark difference between people who were willing to ask questions and people who shut up and did what they were told.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and I pray that we continue to use what happened to encourage kids to ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
Ask questions why, and that is what classical allows them to do through classical works of literature, and to realize, you know, guess what? You know, you're a real smart kid, but you're actually not the first person to ever ask this question.
Mm-hmm.
People have been asking, you know, who are we? You know, what is the nature of man? What is the nature of God, if you believe in God? How do we, you know, is the human heart inherently good or inherently evil? And how do we wrestle around with that? Those are things that we've been asking since the very beginning of time. And that's what classical allows students to do, so that someday it's very normal for them to simply ask, why? And I'm yeah. shocked at how few people are just willing to ask why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how few people. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm gonna go a little lighter from that because that was excellent. But I wanted to point something out, Jeremy, that I think you are probably noticing as well, because I think you wrote an article about this. Is that, you know, college entrance is one of these things we're seeing a lot of colleges struggling with enrollment in the last couple of years, especially some of the small private Christian colleges.
Yeah.
But the ones that are having exponential growth are ones that have classics programs, or like Hillsdale. I think they had 50 in your article. I think it was quoted as having 53% growth in just even 1 year, that was. And so talk about that too. Students are probably, they're speaking with their feet a little bit. You know, they're voting with their feet. They're saying, I don't want to go to these colleges that are going to teach me to hate America and hate myself and everybody else, you know.
Yeah.
And they're finding these schools that have these classics programs. Do you want to talk about that a little bit too?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we've seen a 13% decline over the past 10 years alone in young people going to four-year brick-and-mortar liberal arts colleges. 13% over
That's
10 years, which is
very significant.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, they've doubled enrollment at Benedictine College. They've set all-time records at Ave Maria. Hillsdale is under a 20% acceptance rate. They doubled enrollment in almost 1 year at New St. Andrews College in Idaho. Mm. They had record apps 2 years ago at Grove City College. Patrick Henry, you look at Thomas Aquinas, they launched a whole new campus in Massachusetts, and it's filled up with a waiting list as well. And this is happening at the same time that there's a contraction, and often actually schools closing their doors now as well, because these small brick-and-mortar liberal arts colleges, a lot of them are not offering a liberal arts education.
Right.
They're not offering, right? They're not offering
oxymoron.
Yeah, they're not offering anything of value. And if they don't have kind of a brand name, which is the only thing that gives some of these institutions value, they don't have any substance to keep them afloat.
Mm-hmm. Didn't I hear that Gordon College was getting rid of their classics program? Because that's the other interesting thing, is that in the last couple of years, I've read where some institutions are actually getting rid of their classics program. Are you aware of that at all?
You know, I think Gordon did, but I think a place like Gordon has done a really good job of maintaining a really serious core curriculum. And they've also started, and I'm not sure the difference there with the graduate and the undergraduate, but Gordon actually has one of the four top, the ones that I recommend the most, graduate programs for heads of schools and administrators. And it's actually run by all people, Keith Nix at the Veritas School, Eric Cook, who's the president of the Society for Classical Learning. So it's a Gordon graduate program, but it's run by all these folks kind of well within the movement for a long time. So
That's good.
But yeah, was there another question on that as well?
No. I just wanted to make that point that, you know, the colleges offering the classics seem to be really thriving. And I think it's important for people to take a look.
Yeah, and it's bucked all the national trends. I mean, it really has. And you know, you just go and it just takes visiting. It doesn't, you know, you go to one of these, you go to Hillsdale and it's like, I had no idea college could be like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of shocking.
What a beautiful thing. Well, we are out of our time again. It's amazing how fast these conversations go. But Jeremy, thank you for joining us today to talk about classical education and why it is really taking off. And last week joining us on the Classic Learning Test. And you can follow Jeremy Tate at Twitter at
Jeremy Tate 41.
There we go. All right. Thank you.
Rebecca. Love the work y'all are doing. Thank you so much for being important voices in this movement.
Thank you, Jeremy. Take care. Good night.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.